like watching a TV, but like not a TV.
Nearly Beloved, we're gathered here tonight to celebrate the fact that we've returned home from paradise. We're a little bit sunburnt. We're a lot hungover. Some of us are in love. And we're going to dive straight into The Bachelor 2020. We've popped on our tuxedos. We've wiped the sweat from our brow and nervously greeted each other on the red carpet. My name's Lucy May. I'm your host for these proceedings. And my favorite gal in a penguin suit, my co-host is Karen Biggering.
Hello.
Hello. Zip, pop your little feet on.
I offer you my flipper.
My flipper. And I take that flipper and I shake it cutely. We recorded this on Wurundjeri and Wadawurrung land. And let's dive into this season. Karen, are you in love with Lockie?
I wouldn't say I'm in love with him, but I don't hate him.
Yeah.
Is that my question? Is that my question for this episode?
Yeah, no, that's – oh, no, no. Oh, no, no.
That's one of the questions you have for me.
It was just an amuse-bouche an amuse-douche for you.
An amusing douche.
An amusing douche.
Yeah, I expected to really, you know, have a strong reaction against him and I didn't. So I'm taking that as like a good sign.
A big win.
For him. Obviously.
Yeah.
He's been sweating on my approval.
Exactly. I'm going to move on in a moment to my actual question for you, but I just want to note that Osha completely ripped off my important question.
Before we go any further, I have a important question that I need to ask you.
Is that patented? I have an important question to ask you.
Yes. And Pedestrian TV stole our Would You Rather format, which as far as I am aware, we have trademarked and no one is allowed to use it.
You invented the Would You Rather question.
I assume that I did. No one's told me otherwise. Right. So in that vein, Karen, I have an important question for you.
Do you?
I do. Are you going to answer it?
I am.
Okay. The options that I'm giving you are choose an energy, Rosemary as the penguin or Steph as the dad?
Choose your weapon.
Yeah. Like you're building your character.
Yeah. Rosemary was a very strong open, very strong cold open. Cold, get it, penguin?
Frozen tundra open.
But I have to say Steph because
– yeah.
She took a situation in which we've seen over and over contestants complain and kvetch and act like it's so unfair that they're being forced to play the least attractive person, and she just ran with it, owned it, completely dominated. So,
yeah.
Steph, we stan. The dark horse.
I
the burrito girl who we were
the burrito
like,
girl.
We were
yes,
like,
who I was sledging.
Okay. Yeah, you had at least one eyebrow raised.
Yeah, I had a few swipes at her about how burrito isn't a personality, liking burritos isn't a personality, and oh, funny, you know, a thin white girl likes burritos, so that's attractive. But like, I'm sure if anyone else was like, oh, I love burritos, it's not like making them extra attractive. But then she just bowled me over and now I think I might want to marry her.
Well, she's practically local. So if she's Geelong, she's from Geelong. So if
oh,
she doesn't
she
yeah, G-Troit. So if she isn't the one or one of the ones in the love oblong,
yeah.
Slide into the old DMs.
I will. And she's also a teacher for kids with special needs, which I just think is like rad. What a cool person.
She's basically the best person there.
Pretty much. Look, I probably would choose Steph Dad Energy, Big Dad Energy too. However, we can't slide across the ice on our bellies right in front of Rosemary the Penguin, because that was pretty amazing. Rocking up amongst all of the glittery gowns, and in that the penguin outfit, going on about how she's gonna poop her pants, and
although she still so kind of kept the ace in the hole of the tight sparkly dress underneath.
Yes,
I sort of felt like it would have been cooler if she just committed to the penguin.
If she just stayed in it,
but I feel like other people were more impressed with the outfit reveal, like Drag Race style.
I was pretty impressed with the reveal and also the boob reveal too. It was like, hey, look, I can be funny, and then look at these. Pew, pew.
Look at this rack.
Look at this rack.
I enjoyed the shoes very much. I enjoyed the shoe covers as feet.
Yeah, the feet when she was striding across.
They really tickled me. And I also enjoyed the flippers, like the hands inside the flippers.
Yeah, yeah. He was holding, they had that shot of Lockie holding the flippers. I thought that was funny.
Deceased.
I liked that.
It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that they were really cute. And it was entertaining to me that there was this running motif of sourpuss women later on saying, well, I could have done that. I could have done a high kick. I could have worn a penguin costume. I could have dressed up as the dad and been a really good sport. Except you didn't.
By parade of women saying this, you mean one woman, Laura, saying this so often that it became a parade.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Laura has cornered the, you know, Bisha ripped off sourpuss market. And what did she say about it's like, we've got a theme going here where the dress up like a dickhead and Lockie likes it. And it was like, yeah, like no shit. Have you watched the show before? Like I've never even watched the show before. And I know that if you walk out in a normal after five cocktail gown, you're going to get lost in a parade of beauties who all look exactly the same. Like they've gone to the Logies.
Yep. Or the Brownlow.
Obviously, a bit of cut through is just savvy sense.
It's necessary. You've got to get brand cut through for sure. And Rosemary did that even before the show aired. She was in all the promos as the penguin suit woman. That's genius.
Yeah, she knew what she was doing.
She sure did. I want to say, just circle on back for a moment to talk about the Bachelor himself before we talk about what really matters, which is the rest of the women.
Mm-hmm.
In that, okay, as I said when on the pod, when we said we were going to do the Bachelor, I thought he was incredibly boring and I didn't have any kind of interest in him and no fizz or anything. But and same pretty much all the way through the first episode, I was sort of three quarters watching and then also tweeting at the same time, looking at what other people were – no, tweeting about the show, live tweeting it and looking at what other people were saying. I wasn't just tweeting about, like, I don't know.
Ozpol.
Yeah. Gogglebox or whatever. Farmer wants a wife. Farmer get alive.
Don't besmirch one of our constituent TV shows. That's part of our kingdom as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, everything the reality TV tar touches, that's
reality right. Dating show related is ours.
Is us. All right. The good and the bad. The quote unquote good and the bad. Anyway, I watched the whole episode and was just nothing. And then about 15 minutes into the second episode, something poked up like a little meerkat again and I was like, wait a minute, is he kind of cute? Or like, is he kind of a bit attractive?
Can you pinpoint like a moment or something he said or did that made you go,
Yeah, so probably the moment that I thought, wait, actually, are you all right, was when he was like he couldn't open the champagne bottle. And I thought that was kind of a cute reversal of like the woman not being able to. No, I don't know. And just a couple of times he said to people like, oh, I'm really nervous.
You thought he seemed genuine. Like you thought he seemed sincere.
Yeah, sort of a bit more sincere than I thought he was to begin with. And I didn't watch that Survivor season, but I just suddenly got a little bit, oh, actually maybe he's Not too bad, which is probably going to make watching this a lot more fun, because then I went back and watched the first bit of the first episode again with that lens, and I was like, oh, maybe I could get into him actually. Aww. He said a few cute things and he was actually like asking people questions.
Yeah.
When he dropped in the when Laura was like, ew, Bali's gross and like you can't even drink the water and how much would you buy me or spend on my birthday present and Louis Vuitton and blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, I could get you a Louis Vuitton handbag with no trouble in Bali. And I thought, I don't know, it just seemed quite kind of funny.
Endearing.
Yeah.
So to lay it out for the listeners, Lucy was not interested in doing The Bachelor partly because she had no spark with Lockie, and also coming so hot off the heels of Bachelor in Paradise.
I needed a moment to mop my brow.
10. You don't even – look, you need to give independent podcasters a little bit of breathing space in between seasons.
A week at least.
It was actually in a turn up for the books, it was actually me who said to Lucy, I think we should do it.
Yeah.
Because as I mentioned in the last episode, I thought a lot about what Dr. McAllister said about these shows really being about the contestants. And I just thought after Paradise and me being drunk on love for the women of Paradise, I was like, I need 25 more women to fall in love with. You know, obviously the numbers game means that there might be like three
of
those 25 that I will fall in love with. That's fine.
Yes.
And but then I started watching the promos and I was just hooked on him as a kind of, like I said to you, I was intrigued, as a kind of foil almost. Like he didn't have what, like I said, I've never watched a Bachelor or a Bachelorette all the way through. I've only ever watched like little grabs here and there, but it seemed to me like often the Bachelor is like this pretty kind of suave hottie who's like, oh, I'm an astrophysicist, or I'm a doctor, or I'm this, or I'm, you know, it's a kind of you know, he's meant to be like the catch, you know, which in Australian culture of romance is like the upper middle class white professional male who, you know, owns some investment properties and whatever, like the Michael.
Yeah, of math.
I can't believe I remembered his name. Or the honey badger seems to be like, you know, the giant buffoon, right?
Yeah, the larrikin.
So this seemed like something different, like this very sincere, very, you know, he's been blooded on TV already, but so they know he's good talent, but he seems – you know, it could all just be like a total act, but it's enjoyable to watch, as we were saying about like Love, No Love Island and too hot to handle and stuff. We were like, I don't need to believe this is true, but I need to have a good time while I'm watching it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt about him. I found him very kind of magnetic. And in the first two episodes, I have been impressed, actually, like by a number of different decisions that he made. I'm like, yeah, you know, that seems you are not a bad guy.
Like what decisions made you like him?
Well, the fact that when he got in, like you said, on the red carpety, rose petal-y bit, he was asking them lots of questions. Yeah. He was saying to them, you know, like, yeah, give me your hands. Don't, you know, like, I'll steady you. Don't be nervous. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like he was a good, you know, partner.
Yes,
he was like,
agreed,
turning up, like in the improv sense of like, I'm here, I'm listening, I'm asking questions, I'm giving you a chance to shine.
Yes,
you know?
And.
Yeah, yes, and. So that made me like him, but also, and he also seemed genuinely happy to meet all of them.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have that, the producers didn't get to make any hay out of him having like, disappointed, sneering kind of eye roll reactions to anyone, because he was just like, hey, I'm open to everyone.
Yeah.
Obviously all 25 women were not his, you know, instant type or cup of tea or whatever, but he seemed like jovial and interested and engaged with all of them. So I was like, yeah, I was like waiting for him to do something really obnoxious and he didn't.
Yeah, he didn't. And I enjoyed that. He is this interesting Australian archetype of the
bushman.
Well, I was going to say the overseas traveler.
Oh, the expat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, migrant. For non-white people.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's my, you know, literature degree talking, is that the archetype of the bushman in Australian literature and Australian culture is like everything from the farmer to the Anzac yes. to the footballer to the, you know, he's like aggressively macho and male, super capable, prizes mateship above all else, you know. And so he kind of fits that super physical description.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. He also is this other kind of, you know, he's like the, yeah, the nomad, the digital nomad entrepreneur yes, as well.
The entrepreneur yeah. running an adventure company in Bali.
How many Australians run a company in Bali?
Yeah, I mean.
That's what I mean, thousands.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Because I was going to say that, so Bali is, it's not Australia and, you know, obviously it's its own culture within a larger culture as well in Indonesia, but it's not like it's, I don't know, he's in the middle of, like the Mongolian steppes or something, or, you know, like it's not really.
Well, for Perth, he's from Perth, isn't he?
Yeah.
For Perth people and Darwin people, it's like
right
a
there.
Hop.
Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of do it like, you know, like Sydney, Auckland. Mm-hmm. They just, it's a little hop to them.
Yeah.
From Melbourne, I think we're the farthest, you know, besides Hobart, we're the farthest away if you want to go on holiday to Bali.
Yeah. It's 6 hours or something from Melbourne.
So, yeah. I mean, it's still pretty close. So him going and living half the year in Bali kind of, to me, codes two ways. One is that he is making a lot of money and living this really nice lifestyle in a country where you where your dollar goes further and you can afford to live like a super rich person, but also that he's not wanting to spend all his time in this like super conservative white. You know what I mean? Like it kind of reads bad and good.
Yes,
you know,
agreed. I think it's got a mixture because, I mean, yes, it does say something about you if you move to another country and start a business and all of those things, and it's not a country where like the first language is your own and so forth. But at the same time, a big white guy going to Bali and running an adventure company and not liking spicy food is like, that's pretty.
You didn't love that.
Yeah, I didn't love that bit. So you're right. It's a mixture of things and you could read it each way. And the idea of, oh, well, your money goes further there. So like, I'm going to go and, you know, live a lifestyle that I couldn't live here because of disparity in wealth and so forth between the two countries. However, hopefully he also employs people.
Yes.
It's not simple.
This is the thing, is that, and look, this is probably like way too deep into like the economic relationship between Indonesia and Australia, but like it also makes me think of like all the people who go to Bali to run a company because it's cheaper to manufacture things there and all of these companies that are like, it's Australian designed, but it's made in factories in Bali. Mm-hmm.
Or varying levels of appropriate treatment of people and wages.
Fair work practices, et cetera. Yeah. But an adventure company has to be run in Bali.
Yeah, because you have to be there to have the landscape.
It's the adventure is you've come here to surf Canggu or to, you know, fucking zip line Ubud or whatever.
Or bloody ride that bike along that ravine, which gave me a little bit of, like, actually quite a lot of anxiety.
I didn't love that.
Yeah.
Let me be clear. His entire, like, life choices / things that he likes doing repulse me.
Yeah, not for you.
Not for me. And obviously the date on the boat, I'm like, this is my idea of hell.
Oh, really?
But like nothing about him is like, I'm not vibing him as like a hottie who I would think I would have anything in common with. I'm like judging him as, are you a good man or not? And I feel like he's either tricking me or he is a good man because it's a kind of – because I have no interest in everything else. All of that doesn't work any magic on me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised, Karen, that you wouldn't want to scale up a cliff wearing a helmet that presumably doesn't provide much protection if you plummeted 800 feet. That's not what you'd like to do on a Sunday arvo?
Or go on a boat in Sydney Harbour.
I don't mind going on a boat as long as I don't have to go too far out into like – being out on water where I can't see land, I've actually scuba dived a lot and stuff, and the whole time I'm terrified. Yeah, yeah. I've got I've got my open water license and everything.
So Lockie will be able to take you adventure diving, but not me.
I could go scuba diving with Lockie. I would be shitting myself about sharks the whole time.
I keep thinking about how, remember when Mikey and Natasha had to do that rock climbing? Was it rock climbing or something? And she was just like, oh, my nails, whatever. And he was just like, God, get over it, woman.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God, I would also be like, I don't want to do this. This is shit.
For other reasons.
I would be Steve. Yeah. I would be Steve. I would be like, why can't we just sit and have a glass of wine?
Can't we just have some mulled wine by the fire?
So that's what I mean, is that like I'm watching Lockie and I'm like, you're a nightmare in lots of ways. Like this intrepid colonialist explorer. He also kind of seems a cut above basic.
Yeah, agreed. He seems palatable enough to get me through this.
The other things that I liked were that he asked to talk to Rosemary first.
Yes, I liked that too.
That he did the lift with Nicole.
No, I think that should be banned. For anyone who's not Patrick Swayze, no one should ever, ever attempt that lift.
That was silly and fun.
Should be illegal.
And I liked it. And that he thought that Steph was such a major cack.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, these are the things that I liked about him.
He was really losing it when she was being funny, and I liked that because as a funny woman, I appreciate men who laugh at my jokes.
Yeah, and just that she was rolling the dice and she clearly just owned that whole situation, you know.
Yeah.
And he was there for it. He was loving it. I thought that was cool. She obviously went up in his estimation.
Definitely. And she was starting from a fairly high bar anyway because she, you know, rocked in number one in the editing, whether or not it was number one in how it was played out on the red carpet entrances, in that red dress with the blonde hair and the burrito talk and so forth. How was the girl? I felt so bad. The editors made me laugh when they put the woman, I think, next, who was like, hi, I've got chilies for you to eat. And by the way, I'm asthmatic, like having a Ventolin. She was sweet as well.
She was, she was crazy.
I enjoyed a lot of the women. I mean, look, okay, we should set aside Bella is a perfect princess lady who seems very sweet.
Did you see Jess Brody's story about Bella's entrance?
No.
It was like, I don't know the name of the song, but it was like Sarah McLachlan-y, when Bella walked in, it was like, da, 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 da. Like she almost got a kind of bridal edit.
Yeah.
Which was such a record scratch from everything else, you know, that it kind of felt like either, we're being strongly led to believe
that she's the one.
Or we're being led up the garden path.
I wonder if it's the latter because their boat date was really nice but also seemed quite boring. Although then he said it was the best date I've ever been on, I think. But you're laughing. It's been boring because, you know, why are you laughing at me? It did.
I'm just laughing at him saying that was the best date I've ever been on. Like, wow. Did the cameras not catch the part that was like
interesting,
really nice?
But also because they were kind of just sitting there not talking. And I get that he said, oh, it was nice to have comfortable silences. But I don't feel like comfortable silences on a first date are a good thing. Comfortable silences, I love. I mean, people are always surprised because I never stop talking, but I actually do enjoy a comfortable silence. And that's one of the things I like with my partner.
The comfortable silence is definitely not good fucking TV either.
First date when you're on a boat and you're on a reality TV show.
You're on a motherfucking boat.
Yeah. So that I felt was a bit concerning. And then I thought one thing that I did like as well when he did that super dorky grabbing the rose from under the water, and then he came up like kind of, it was meant to be kind of dashing and romantic, but it was like going to get the water and she's just kind of there treading water, like, waiting for him, grabs the rose, and then kind of his hair's plastered all flat on his forehead. And yeah, didn't quite. And then they did that bit really quite kind of awkward stop start kiss, and
I think that's because they were treading water. Yeah,
they're like playing water polo.
Yeah, it's like they were kind of like they couldn't go for forward. A full-on pass.
They were about to like piff the ball into the net.
It was sort of stilted and a bit sort of passionless.
Yeah, it just seemed a little bit bland. So setting her aside, I think my top three for the love rhombus at the end currently are Steph, Bella, and Irina, the nurse. They're probably my top. The only other one who might be in there to make it a love pentagon is the feather dancer lady, Nicole.
Nicole, surely. Yeah. She just got the triple threat rose.
Yeah, she did. That's right. The triple threat, which I like as an innovation. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Very agile.
Was she the one who had to dress up as the bartender?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a good sport about that too, which I liked. And she seems fun.
Yeah, she kind of came out from behind the bar and was like throwing shapes.
When she said to him, it's pretty crazy you're out there, but I dance on cruise ships. And it's not that crazy. They're out there. And it, in the same flavor that having an adventure company.
Well, it is now.
Well, oh, true that. Yeah, at the moment, yes. It will be. She's I dance on the Ruby Princess. In the same flavor that having an adventure company in Bali is kind of out there but not that out there, like dancing on a cruise ship in Philippines is like, I guess it's pretty out there. I don't know. Am I being mean?
If I met someone and they said that they were an entertainer on a cruise ship, I would be like, you're fucking out there.
Okay. Yeah, that's.
You're literally out there, but you're also figuratively doing something pretty fucking intense.
You're literally out there in international waters. As far as I know, laws don't apply. That's true. I take it back. No, that's true.
But truly, cruise ships are like lawless hellscapes. This is one of my patented rants.
Oh, cool. Great.
They have like laws of the sea.
Yeah.
But they also like have international waters. And then if the crime is committed on the ship while they're in dock somewhere, then it's the laws of that place. Like they're a nightmare.
Yeah.
But also I think that they're like, I think to work on a cruise ship, you have to have a lot of endurance. Like I think the pay isn't that great, but you just have to like keep performing every day for like hundreds of days.
Yeah, like 8 shows a week for 10 weeks or similar.
But cruise ships are like actual fucking nightmares. Like they are like criminal cesspits. Really bad things happen on cruise ships. And it's really hard to prosecute them.
Yes, that's a storyline in Succession, and also obviously horrific real life crimes that we know about in Australia. So we maybe won't get too far into that. But yes, I agree. And apart from the whole criminal hellscape situation, the food hygiene situation is suspect. And also, in the same way that I'm scared of sharks when I'm scuba diving. More often than you'd think I would, given how scared I am of sharks, being on a ship in the middle of the water out there is scary to me. Okay, so Nicole is out there for being there, and I'm glad that she's okay, and I'm glad she seems like a nice person. Who's your top three then for the rhombus?
I agree with you that they're the people who the edit is telling us have got the most kind of sparkiness. There are certainly people there that again, what we have seen of them so far, you feel like they're going to be gone soon because they're so volatile and unlikable and fragile.
And by that you mean Zoe Claire.
Well, Zoe Claire, Roxy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Roxy.
Even Ariba in some ways, like I feel, and Laura, I feel like they're kind of, they're of course being produced and edited and set up to play these kinds of roles. But they also, you know, as we've talked about before, they also are actually behaving this way.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, saying these horrible things. So it's hard to not kind of root against them. But, you know, I think that they're going to seal their own fates.
Well, I think that certainly Laura and Zoe Claire are. That we posted about this on Instagram, but the rant, the drunken rant that Zoe Claire went on when she was just incensed by Ariba coming over and inserting herself into the conversation, which one, have you ever watched one of these shows before? That's one of the tropes is, can I grab you for a minute? That's a thing in this show. And I don't know if you realize Zoe Claire, I know it's her full name, but saying Zoe Claire makes me laugh every time. Sorry, Zoe formal. Claire's out there. Yeah, formal. ZC. She just lost it, like, when Ariba came over, who I enjoy Ariba. I find her entertaining. I think she is probably insufferable, but she's fun telly to me. I was enjoying
her. She's good television for sure. She's playing the role, the archetype of, you know, the young, ambitious girl boss. I'm the boss. I'm the boss of this. I'm the boss of that. Boss, boss, yeah. Boss, boss, boss. I want to say to her, honey, you know, like, being the boss is bad. Like, yeah. Bosses are the enemy. But, you know, there's problems with this, like, girl boss feminism.
Yeah.
But she's obviously, like, very, self-assured, ambitious, dynamic, you know, assertive, aggressive. And that's all fine. That's all, like, there's nothing wrong with that. And actually, she's sort of playing the game the way that she wants to play it. It definitely seemed like Zoe Claire was shmammered, which kind of brings up some, you know, duty of care issues about the show.
Continuing to film her and show her while she was clearly drunk.
Yeah, like, if you're at work and you're clearly shit-faced, you have to stop work. And well, you get sent home.
I guess eventually they did do that because she was quote unquote taken ill, like Lindsay Lohan used to be exhausted.
It was a failure in the duty of care to this person who they, you know, plied with alcohol and then filmed while they you know, let's face it, behaved so appallingly, you know, broke a number of laws, but also a massive failure in the duty of care towards Ariba.
Oh, that, definitely.
You know, the reason why you can't be pissed at work is so you don't hurt anyone. And that's exactly what she did.
And by that, we mean the way – so Zoe Claire at various points mocked Ariba's name, so horribly racist, then is physically intimidating her, sort of leaning over her, pointing her, putting her hand in her face, sort of
just menacing her.
Menacing her physically. And, you know, for that to be, for Ariba, one of the only women of color in that room, to be, have an angry white woman looming over her is just, it was really sickening to see. And the thing that also sickened both of us, I know, is that it, as far as we saw, no one did a thing to intervene. No one said, hey, back off. This is not okay.
Shocking. And so the behavior was vile, but to have not one person, I mean, let alone a friggin' producer, but not one of the other contestants, you know, they just kind of recoiled in horror. And we didn't see any of them go, hey, fuck, are you serious? Steady on. Go and have a glass of water and sort yourself out.
Yeah.
Because the treatment of Ariba definitely was racially motivated.
Yeah.
And that was the horrible irony of Zoe Claire making these, you know, grandstanding about this imagined prejudice against her as a person with red hair. Like, it was like bizarro world. Because it was like, no, actually, you're going after her because she's not white. And you're so incensed that someone who you clearly think is, like, not entitled to as much as you is acting as though she has the right to take up space and hold her ground, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was really clearly a horrible kind of racially tinged episode.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a big problem and question mark over the role of the show and the producers.
Yeah. Because if you saw, I mean, Ariba sort of did still hold her ground and, laugh in a way that claimed that laugh as a power, you know, I'm not bothered by this. But just watching it, you know, I felt my fight or flight or freeze reflex kicking in to have someone shrieking in your face like that while you're sitting, they're looming over
pointing
you.
A finger and And she's abusing her. She's saying, you know, it was disgusting and you're a mole and all this stuff. It was really putrid.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said to you when we were watching it, like imagine if Alicia had been there or Abby or any of our kind of stans, you know, what the hell was everyone thinking?
Yeah, just letting to let that go on.
Happen.
Yeah.
But you're right, like Ariba, you know, really just took it in her stride in that way that you do when the guy at the fucking train station is like looming over you saying, you know, give me your phone number. And you're like, you just kind of power through, and doesn't mean that it doesn't make you feel sick and make you feel as though your space has been invaded.
Yeah, and your adrenaline, you know.
Yeah. And in this case, she knows it's being filmed for national television. So she's also got the extra pressure of she is well aware that of the limitations on her reaction, that if she had stood up and said, are you fucking serious? Get away from me. She would be the angry black woman.
Yeah.
And she would be the hysterical, you know, overreacting, you know, interloper or whatever. Yeah. And that's kind of how the whole thing went down. I also thought that Laura making fun of Bali was really racist.
Oh, hun, definitely. I mean, literally said Bali is gross.
You can't drink the water. Like most of the fucking world, you know. Like
it's dangerous, she was saying. Like, yeah. Exactly. That foul. Was definitely awful.
And she also, what else did she do? Oh, and she was like in the limo going, oh, you know, these Lebanese drums. Like, you know, she was just – she was a total foully from like beginning to end.
Yeah, not a fan.
And I really resent being made to feel ill will towards another woman.
Yeah.
But she was irredeemable.
Yeah. Laura's definitely got to get the boot. See, I think that Ariba will stay because she's good telly. She's so nice to look at. Her hair is so shiny. I really enjoy looking at her hair. She's a hottie. But she's also obviously smart, she's entertaining, and she's there to have some sort of villain edit, whether it's a true villain edit or more just a kind of firecracker troublemaker edit, we'll see. But so I reckon Ariba will stick around, but I think that Laura's probably going to get booted in the next.
All we know about Ariba so far is that she is incredibly self-possessed and quite ruthless.
Yeah.
Which, like,
cool.
So what?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's all we know about her. You know what I mean? Like, she maybe comes off as a bit kind of callow, a bit kind of conceited, like most. Yeah.
And
you know,
maybe a bit young.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, and then I stopped myself, like most beautiful young, you know, 20-something women who are like on these dating reality shows, they're like, you know, some of them have got like huge egos. Kira. But why not? You know, why not? They're not.
Why wouldn't you?
They're not hurting anyone, you know?
I really liked her sparkly dress too, the sequin dresses.
She's obviously very powerful and beautiful and intelligent. And so that makes her good TV.
Mm.
Zoe, Claire, and Laura, you know, to a lesser extent, but maybe in the same vein, really demonstrated their lack of integrity.
Yeah.
And their lack of, you know, goodwill towards any other women, their lack of, you know, grace and worldliness and diplomacy and, you know, they were really
lack of warmth. They weren't warm.
Yeah. And they, even the Zoe Claire debacle, wasn't good TV, wasn't good to watch, wasn't like entertaining. It was just cringe.
I just found it quite befuddling. She was clearly really drunk, which is, I find uncomfortable sometimes, you know, in these contexts to watch. And also, she, as much as it was inappropriate to present it in the way that she did, she's clearly got trauma from, who knows, maybe childhood bullying. I mean, bullying of redheaded kids is a thing.
She's internalized that. Like, she's internalized this idea of, like, you know, to the extent of paranoia.
Yeah, that she thinks that literally the only thing that people are thinking when she's in a room is she's got red hair. And also, her hair's not even that red. Is that, like, it's kind of wand. Anyway, by the by, because clearly she sees herself as a flame-headed redhead, and that is literally the only thing when that people see when they look at
her. That's her identity. That's her identity. And maybe that was shaped by, you know, relentless teasing and probably even, you know, horrible treatment throughout her childhood. And it's not like a stretch to imagine that growing up with red hair in a schoolyard is going to be a piece of cake.
Yeah.
There is a genuine kind of thing that happens around redheads that I'm sure they would all recognize among themselves.
Yeah.
But the absurdity of comparing that to a type of genuine prejudice or discrimination that affects your life chances or your fucking chances with The Bachelor is fucking paranoid delusion.
Yeah, it is.
But it was also kind of, you know, white woman's tears syndrome.
Definitely. You know? Oh, that it definitely was that, because here's a woman who, from what we can see, enjoys many of the most powerful privileges in our society. She's thin, she's white, she, you know, presumably is able-bodied and healthy. I'm making an assumption, but she's probably heterosexual given that she's on the show, not necessarily. So but the one thing she's focusing on is this maybe real but very, very intensified prejudice, I suppose, against people with the particular hair color that she has. And it's just really interesting to me that sort of taking on the mantle of oppression over that, when in so many other ways that we can see, at least, she is ultra privileged.
Yeah. And the way she behaved was like a peak of white privilege.
Extremely entitled.
Outrageous entitlement.
And violent.
Yeah. Yeah. And white supremacy, you know, hurts people, like kills people. But she's got this kind of narrative about herself that is, not connected with reality.
Yeah, yes. It's delusional.
Oh, God.
Anyway, what's your prediction?
Well, hopefully Ariba's the one to dispatch them both in some sort of like.
Not literally, not like.
Off them in the mansion. Thanks for clarifying that.
Thanks.
I wasn't advocating violence against them.
No.
But, they're apart from everything else, apart from their racism and their, you know, they're utterly charmless.
Yeah, they're
which
so.
Which is unforgivable.
Yeah, agreed.
They're just, you know, there's nothing about either of them that makes me want to know a single thing about them.
I felt like that about Laura from the very first shot that we got of her, which was her, are they drums? I don't want to hear any more drums. Don't want to hear any more drums. So from the beginning, I really felt that about Laura. I actually had some hopes for Zoe Claire though, because she was the one who said, oh, Fanny flutters, and, you know, gave that kind of iconic quote. And then, she just pissed it all away.
I don't know. The beer opening with the teeth thing.
Yeah,
I mean, she's from Queensland, so I recognize the archetype of this woman. I did feel like that also reeked of like real pick me shit.
Yes,
you know, like, I'm just one of the boys, and you know, like I look like this, but you know, look at my cheekbones, which she also said later. But you know, like I can knock back a few brewskis, you know, on the hill at Ballymore. Not a reference that you will understand.
No, I don't, but I get the flavor. Let's move on from them, because we also have neglected to mention someone who I don't think she's going to end up towards the end, but I did enjoy her swearing on her eyebrows, and that's Charlie.
That was very strange.
She was trying to make fetch happen.
There was a lot of filler, I got to say. But, I mean, that's the editing process, I suppose, that they've got to drag out this charade for as long as possible, where they're going to, I guess, drip feed to us the different personalities of the women.
Yeah.
But I thought Roxy was intriguing as well in the beginning, because she kind of had this slight, I don't know, kind of almost soft butch vibe that I just really liked. Yeah, she's a super hottie.
Yeah.
But then she kind of lost me in the the challenge and
this
kind of stuff, because she just sort of seemed slightly not fully hinged.
Yeah.
She was like, it was my moment and you ruined it. And then, you know, burst into tears. And I was shocked at how many of the women burst into tears.
Yes, just started crying. I suppose it's a pretty high pressure environment, and maybe you wouldn't know how you were going to react emotionally in the moment, even though you know you're on a dating show with 25 other women.
Maybe they're just like really hungry.
Yes.
You know? Or like really tired. They've been up all night talking, or, you know, and yeah, like you say, all the adrenaline and everything. But just harking back to this thing about Zoe Claire being so pissed. We didn't see any real evidence of anyone else being totally off their face. And it made me think about that thing that we found out about The Bachelor in Paradise, that they were limiting their drinks. Yeah, that they were encouraged to eat like 5 times a day. They were served meals. They were allowed to have food 24 hours. They were only allowed to have 2 drinks per hour.
Yeah.
In order to kind of, you know, reduce the chances of anyone getting like completely maggoted and doing whatever. But from watching shows like Unreal and stuff, it seems like The Bachelor proper has like the opposite ethos, which is just sort of ply the girls with as much booze as possible.
They definitely ply them, especially during the cocktail parties, with a lot of alcohol. They drink a lot of champagne. I think maybe they don't drink a lot outside of the cocktail parties, but they definitely drink a heap during them. And that's part of the vibe.
Yeah. I don't love it. I don't love it. I mean, like I've got like my own kind of problems with drinking culture in Australia as a monolith, but it just seems like, a recipe for disaster. And I liked that Ariba was sitting on the couch just eating her like catering pack sandwich. I kind of thought, that's probably not meant to be, like, that's from the craft table and that's probably not meant to be on camera. But she's just like fucking looking after number one. I dug that.
You got to keep your energy levels up.
Keep your energy up, you know, and that she was obviously, hungry and went and got something to eat. Like, it was good. Yeah. But I did think it was weird that they don't have food there. They all drink a lot. It seemed like a Zoe Claire is sort of like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, agreed. We haven't mentioned the intruder. They really mixed it up with another thin white blonde coming in.
She was
not much of an impression on me at all, but maybe she's going to be one of the final ones.
She seemed very bland.
Extremely.
Like, her personality was, I'm wearing a wedding dress. So that worried me.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, to compare her, like we were saying about Roxy, with Roxy at the cocktail party, and then when we saw Roxy's tats, I was like, you seem like someone I want to know more about and get to know. You seem like you've got stories.
She looked familiar to me, actually. I feel like I've seen Roxy on something before, or met Roxy maybe.
Her last name's Kenny, isn't it?
I don't know. I haven't looked it up.
Her name's Roxy Kenny, which made me think of Lisa Curry Kenny.
Oh. All right. Well, we'll explore that.
I have to do some sleuthing. I felt a little bit disappointed to learn how many of the contestants were kind of reality TV show veterans.
Who was on
from other- like, well, like the that kind of insular world of the Bachiverse, that Bella used to date another Bachelor contestant.
Oh, I didn't know that. Who did she
date? Yeah. I think a guy from the American Bachelor.
Oh, I should know this.
And because she was in living in LA, trying to make it as an actor. But apparently, you know, like, no shade. I think all of them, half of them at least, are there to kind of get a career in TV. I mean, Lockie's doing his second reality show in 2 years and nobody's giving him shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, good luck to her. But I feel like it was the same with Bachi in Paradise, remember, that we were kind of like, felt a little bit disappointing to me in terms of that suspension of disbelief, how much of it is sort of done by DMs and preordained and, you know, like I don't know. They all seem to kind of know each other and they've been to the same promo parties at Nova 100 or whatever, you know? Yeah. It kind of had that vibe.
When you could go to parties.
No, I don't.
Dr. Jody, Dr. Love, said on Twitter that that Rosemary and the penguin costume and so forth reminded her of, I think, a woman in an American season who wore some sort of costume and got a comedy edit and then was effectively the litany of the Batchy in Paradise season. So. Right. I don't think Rosemary's going to go to the end on Bachelor, but I think that we'll see her definitely on Batchy in Paradise.
You're already making Paradise predictions.
Yeah, that's my prediction. That's my prediction. Now, Karen.
Yes.
I don't know if you've realized, but you have watched your first two episodes of a Bachelor ever. And would you give it a rose?
No. I wouldn't.
Well, too bad, because the producers, aka me, are keeping you on until the end of the season.
I had serious problems with some of the ethical failures.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy The Bachelor.
Yeah.
I did enjoy look, he's just a giant of a man.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of what I find attractive.
Yeah, what you like to look at.
He's just a friggin' behemoth.
When he's standing next to Osha, Osha's not.
Yeah, Osha's normal.
Normal height. Osha cracked me up on Twitter as well because he said, just apropos of nothing except the show, Lockie is not only a head and shoulders taller than me, there's also twice the distance from nipple to back. He's got double the girth or something like that. And I just like nipple to back. Like, so he means like through his chest.
As the barrel of his chest.
Yeah, the barrel of his chest from nipple to back. But it's a unit of measurement that I think we should use more often. Like, how far is it? Oh, about three nipple to back.
Yeah, so I thought he was like, you know, he ticked a few boxes for me and I was, you know, the bar is so low. I enjoyed quite a number of the contestants.
Yes.
I did not enjoy watching commercials for The Masked Singer. And I did not enjoy watching plot lines from Unreal come true on the show. I did not enjoy the racial politics of Zoe Clare.
No.
So I kind of, yeah, I reserve judgment. I guess I've got a lot of, what's the word, like, I guess I've got some ill will as well because of what happened to Abby.
Yeah.
And how much tea Abby has spilled.
Yep.
I kind of feel protective of all the women in the house and I just keep thinking about them in, like, bunk beds crammed into rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I kind of, there were things about it that really concerned me. But on the other hand, after watching Paradise, it was good to see a bit more structure.
Yeah, agreed.
I felt like I'm invested, put it that way.
Yeah, me too. And on I was going to say pod patron saint, but maybe we've had to retire that since it went so south last time. But Abby commented, I'm pretty sure it was, I think Abby commented on Ariba's post or feed, DM me, like, let's have a chat, which I thought was really cool because clearly she can see that this person might start getting a lot of hate and she wanted to get
absolutely
in there with someone who has been there. And I thought that was very cool.
And the epitext of Instagram did seem to be talking a lot in a quite informed way about the edit that Ariba was getting.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, I don't know if Twitter was the same because I wasn't on there, but yeah, I felt like the difference between the Instagram commentary and say the Facebook group that we were added to, the Bachelor Facebook group, was massive. You know, that was the Facebook, and this is to tell you something about Facebook and Instagram and age differences and, you know, critical literacy. The Facebook group was like, Ariba's a nightmare, and you know, like, and it was like really thinly veiled racist stuff.
Yeah.
And the Instagram commentary was like, this is bullshit. She's getting the same edit that Abby did, and she's clearly a fucking queen, and we love her. And Team Ariba. So there was kind of a divide showing up already, which, yeah, good on Abby for reaching out to her to say, like, I know what's coming. I can help.
We love you, Abby. Come on the podcast.
We do love you, Abby.
We always say that, but we're never up.
another shout out. Yeah. Consider this us inviting you. And another shout out to Alicia that we invoked your name with pride and love and warmth. Watching the horrible, menacing take place in the episode, I was like, imagine if Alicia was there.
Yeah.
She would not stand for it.
She would have sorted that shit out quick smart.
Yeah. So every show needs their Alicia. Who do you think is going to be the Alicia of this season?
Oh, my mind jumped to Steph.
I think Steph's also got maybe the chops to be the litany.
Yeah, she's got that too, that vibe as well. I don't know, who seemed like, Irina maybe?
I think of Irina as being maybe the Alicia.
Yeah, she could be. I mean, we haven't seen really any of that outspokenness though. So we'll see.
Yeah, we shall see.
I'm just starting to like kind of go down a rabbit hole of thinking about our lives together when we've got kids and the white picket fence and my Porsche Cayenne Turbo, and I could go on.
You can ask us to marry you on Nearly_Beloved on Twitter, NearlyBelovedPodcast on Insta, and NearlyBelovedPodcast@gmail.com.
I now pronounce this podcast finished.